You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and I am excited to bring Michelle Parker on the program today. Michelle's our first female on Sponsored, and we're excited to have that going on and really just excited to tell Michelle's story. She grew up in Truckee, California, and she spent her childhood chasing Shane McConkie, JT Holmes, and Scott Gaffney around Squaw Valley, and that's really where she earned her chops in skiing. She was a racer until she was 15, and then she decided to compete in park competitions. She won some U.S. Opens, Ice or Air, and was doing really well for herself in the park scene, but realized that wasn't for her. She wanted to be out exploring the mountains, being out there. She's an adventurer, and she decided to get out of the competition scene altogether and spend time in the mountains, the big mountains. So we are going to talk to Michelle about her competition days and how they graduated into big mountain days. We'll talk to her about Shane McConkie and growing up in Squaw Valley. We'll talk to her about the male-dominated ski industry and how that affects her and the choices she makes. And we'll find out what else fun Michelle Parker has going on with her life right now. So sit back and I'll connect us to Michelle Parker. Michelle.
What's up, pal? How are you?
I am great. How are you doing?
Good. Just got out of the shower and then was trying to think of these inappropriate questions.
I think getting out of the shower is the ideal time to think of inappropriate questions, to tell you the truth.
Yep, exactly.
So that's a show that's on thepowellmovement.com, and that'll be after this, but we're going to go through your whole career and talk all about you. But first, I want to know what you've been up to other than taking a shower this morning.
Well, let's see. I was injured in January. I tore my ACL and meniscus, so I've really been focusing a lot of time and energy on coming back from that injury. It's not my first rodeo, so I felt like this one went pretty well, and my knee's feeling good, and yeah, just been working out a ton and spending a lot of time outside. I just kind of got released to do all the things outside that I really love to do, which is really exciting and re-energizing. And that's been kind of my focus, as well as remodeling my house and picking up the ukulele, writing songs. And yeah, that's about it.
Well, yeah, you're speaking really fast this morning. I think you have a ton of energy, which is always great because whenever I see you, you have a ton of energy and kind of bring the mood up in whatever room we're in. And I've heard about the ukulele playing, and I know that this isn't your first rodeo with an injury. How many knees have you done now?
I've had 3 injuries and totaling 5 separate surgeries.
Dang. And how do you stay positive through those? I know you've experienced so many. You've got to have a plan.
I honestly think I've got like this positivity gene in me. I think that's a thing. It's science. And so I just like smile all the time. And I just try to look at the upside. And injuries really give you a new perspective on yourself and on life and what you're after in life and your purpose in life. And I think that's a beautiful thing. So if you can focus on the outcome and learn from it, I think it's kind of a cool and neat process.
Yeah, injuries are super cool and super neat. Yeah, and they're fun too. So you grew up in Truckee, California. So you grew up within the scene. I mean, life for you was seeing what the bubble of the ski world was. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was born in Truckee. I grew up in Squaw Valley.
Oh, my bad. Squaw Valley. But you've been to Truckee before. I think they have a Subway or something that you might have hit when you used to eat Subway, which is probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, I've got a funny story about Subway and you.
What is that?
When you were my team manager for K2 and we were up in Whistler and you're like, yeah, you can totally have my room, Michelle, because I needed like a room to stay in for one night. And you left and I went into the room and I was like, man, this room smells like onions and like, I don't even know. And I went to bed that night, opened my sheets, and there was like half a Subway sandwich rolled out on the entire bed, onions and like lettuce and tomatoes. It was so ridiculous.
Yeah, well, sometimes I get hungry at night, and instead of waking people up within the apartment that we're at, I figured I'd just keep it in my bed, and that way you'd be able to get sleep for the contest the next day. And that was, you know, me being nice to everybody on the team. So yeah, I do sleep with my food. My wife doesn't like it, but I still do it.
Yeah, standard pal giving me the best bed for the night before a competition. There's more than that story.
I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. You can feel free to share. I have no secrets. And I mean, they'll probably come out at some point during these shows. So they might as well come out now. But we can talk a little bit more about you and your life and find some embarrassing stories about you as well. And I know that you were a racer until about, what, 15 years old?
Yeah.
And were you any good?
Yeah, I won a couple events in Junior Olympics and was definitely on track to like pursuing that as a profession, I guess.
And what happened with that? Why did you decide not to pursue that any further? You're a junior Olympian. That means you're pretty much a badass. What made you change your skiing preferences?
To be honest, I just really love skiing powder. And I love skiing the park with my friends. And I was psyched on just kind of free skiing and the freedom of choosing my own line down the mountain. And the regiment of racing was not what I was looking for at that point in time in my life. So yeah, I just stopped mid-season and switched over to, and I realized that like my passion really wasn't there. And my parents were spending a lot of money on that. And I was young and I was like, no, this isn't really what I want to do. And so I wanted to just free ski with my friends.
What's funny is I just looked at my phone and I actually see your face. I didn't know we were doing a video Skype call, but you can't see me and I can see you. Weird, you just came out of the shower. I wish you would have put clothes on, but whatever. I know I'm not going to look at the phone, and that's the way to be decent here. So you've given up racing. You've kind of found the park. And I think growing up, you're probably chasing JT, Shane McConkie, and Gaffney and that whole crew around Squaw Valley.
Oh, yeah.
And what was that like just living within that scene? And everywhere you look is another, you know, big time pro, it seems like. That's got to kind of be normal after a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was super cool. One of my first skiing partners that I skied with a lot, who kind of like influenced me, I'd say, to switch over from racing to ski in the park and skiing powder, was Dash Long.
Okay.
He was like a little bit older than me, and I used to ski with him all the time. And so, yeah, just being surrounded by all these people kind of made the thought of being a professional skier a possibility, but it kind of fell into my lap. Like, I really didn't chase after it. It just happened.
So how did it happen?
Jason Leventhal spotted me in the park one day, and he came up to me and handed me his business card. And he was like, I thought you were a boy until I saw your braid hanging out. And he was like, I want you to represent my company, which was Line Skis at the time. And yeah, so I wrote him via a business card, and one thing led to the next. He took me to the US Open and kind of showed me the way. And then things just fell into my lap. Very lucky.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great brand to be associated with. And I think if you look at what they've done in skiing, they really set a lot of the trends, especially early on with Twin Tips. And Jason was definitely a visionary with athletes as well as product and everything else that he's done. So great guy to be associated with in the beginning of your career. And how long were you online?
To be honest, it's a blur. I've been skiing like this for 12 plus years now. So gosh, he was my first sponsor. I was on there for a number of years. We made some skis. I skied with Ashley Battersby a lot back in the day. And, you know, we had Dash and Mike Wilson and Tahoe representing Line. And then Eric Pollard was always a huge influence on me.
Yeah, I think he's a huge influence on anybody that's ever clicked into bindings.
Yep.
So you're online, and eventually that ski sponsor changes over to K2. I think I was actually in the back of a pickup truck one summer when the K2 team manager at the time, Mike Goot, was talking to you about bringing you on K2. And was that a hard decision to leave Line, your first sponsor?
Yeah, it's always a hard decision. I think that one of the characteristics that I have as a person is being super loyal. And, you know, sometimes you start to outgrow what, I mean, you just like you, people give you a different offer and it's hard to say no. And it's hard not to want to pursue this as a career and take it pretty seriously. So I think when K2 came around at that time, that team was stacked with, like, you know, Seth Morrison, Sean Pettit, Pep Fujas, Josh Bibby, like Andy Mayer, all these incredible athletes. And it was really an honor. And Crispin Chetler, you know, it was like such an honor to get that offer. And I think it was just, Line was this independent, awesome company, but K2 had a lot more opportunity for me. And so I decided to jump on board with them. And, you know, around that time too, Line had done some really progressive things within the ski industry, creating a binding that ultimately was an ingenious thought process behind changing the binding and how it worked. And it was really cool, but it didn't work for me. And so I needed to move on and maybe try something else out.
Well, I don't think that binding worked for anyone. And I think that was a really big challenge for Line. And they probably had thousands of bindings sitting around for a while. That changed the company a little bit. And I think they got different ownership at one point. Jay was still involved throughout the whole time. But I think it was that reactor binding that you were talking about.
Yeah, and that was tough. Like, I wanted to see Line succeed. And I was really excited about this new binding where you could literally just travel with one binding and as many skis as you wanted and like drill them in straight in. And that was super cool. But ultimately, I think that hurt the company in the long run. And so it was just time for a change.
Yeah. And I think the binding being heavier than the skis was also a challenge.
Quite possibly.
So you're on K2, and at that point in your career, you're focused on contests. And I know that K2 looked to you as being the woman on the podium. We figured that, you know, you had the talent to win any contest that you were in. I'd say your mentality going into the contests were more You weren't, I'm going to get first. You were, you know, about just the sport, the vibe, and keeping a positive attitude around everybody. And it seemed like you ended up on the podium just because of the way you carried yourself and just the way you skied.
Yeah, I think back then my approach to contests, like I went from racing to competing in slopestyle and halfpipe. And while slopestyle and halfpipe were super fun, it wasn't like my focus. It wasn't like I spent a lot of time in the park all the time. It was like, okay, I learned a new trick. I'm psyched on that. I'm going to enter this contest. But my whole deal with competing was like, I just wanted to have fun and I wanted to progress and see these ladies succeed. And so I think, you know, before dropping into a contest, my thought process was like, it's not going to make me a better person if I win or if I get last. Like, I'm still the same person. I just want to have fun. And I did have fun. And it was really an awesome way to build my name. And then ultimately, all I wanted to do was ski powder.
A lot of great competition skiers eventually graduate to that point where they don't need the stress of competition to justify who they are. They want to go out and ski powder and really just get the feeling of skiing through their body instead of the stress of competition. And it's a different outlook on life when you do it that way.
Yeah, it is. And I think one of the key things to like skiing for me is like, sure, it's a career, but this is something that is the most fun thing in my life. It's like my biggest passion. I love it so much. So the second that it like starts to become not fun, then I'm doing something wrong and I need to like reevaluate. So my whole thing was just no pressure, just have fun with it and always smile.
One thing, when you say it's a career, I mean, there is a definite fine line between being a great skier and being a professional skier. And that's changed over the past 10 years since you became a skier. I mean, social media wasn't in the forefront like it is today. How has your aspect of being a professional changed over the past decade on how you market yourself and how you say, this is Michelle Parker?
Yeah, it's been interesting to see it change. And social media is so instant right now, and it's like so time consuming. And it's a part of the profession that I love, but I also despise it as well. I think it's, for me, I'm like a really open person, so I don't really mind sharing like my life with everyone. But at some points, you know, you just don't want to touch your phone or your computer, and finding that balance is something that I always try to do. But yeah, it's crazy how much it's changed just the outlook on being a professional athlete. There's so much more to being a professional athlete than just skiing now.
Yeah, I think it also does create the avenue, though, that you don't have to win contests. You have to create content and make people want to see what Michelle Parker's doing. And based off what I've seen over the entirety of your career, everybody wants to see what you're doing because you're a fun person to be around. And that kind of resonates in everything that you do, which is great for your social.
Aw, thanks, Michael.
No, I think that's, you know, you talk to anybody about who you are and a big smile comes on people's faces. And then when I ask about what we should do, everybody wants to think about the question that's going to embarrass you, because I think that's really fun, is seeing you get uncomfortable. And hopefully we will get that at any appropriate questions.
I'm sure that you will. Like, you out of anyone in the world can do that easily.
Yeah, but I'm not here to make you uncomfortable. I am here to make you uncomfortable. And I guess we should probably get into an uncomfortable question right away. For me, we're in a male-dominated industry, and if anybody knows that, it's you. You travel around, and I'm sure you're the minority everywhere you go. There's always 15 guys and 2 girls, maybe. And that's got to create some weird experiences and maybe some creepy experiences. And I want to know, you know, based on working with photographers, what is the most creepy experience you've had with a photographer, whether they're coming on to you, whether just being inappropriate or just awkward? Something has to have happened.
Oh, man, with a photographer?
Yeah, and please name him.
It's been lucky for me. I haven't really had any. But I will say, like, my very, very first photo shoot that I ever did.
Uh-huh.
And this is that's like not on record. There's like no real anything, pictures online or whatever. But I was like 17 years old and I went to this like free skier photo shoot for when they did the women's issue.
Okay.
And I like was out longboarding and kind of doing my own thing, came back super sweaty. I felt like most of the girls there at the time were like getting ready for this photo shoot. I came in like hot, sweaty, dirty, and just started like stuffing my face with food. And then they're like, Michelle, your photo shoot's on. And there was this like professional model there who was trying to teach us how to model. And like 17 at the time, I didn't know anything. And I was like, first photo shoot ever, super fired up. And they're like, all right, we need you to get in the hot tub in your bathing suit. And I was just like, all right, well, I guess that's what's happening. I didn't know what like the other girls had done. I was super naive to like what the backlash would be. And so Yeah, 17 years old, I ended up taking these super awkward photos in this hot tub with my bathing suit on. And yeah, that happened.
Was that the first, was that the only time you were ever photographed like that in a bathing suit?
Yeah, that was the first time. And it was crazy because for years after that, like the number one interview question was like, how do you feel about doing that photo shoot or whatever? And to me, I'm just like, power to each woman who does her own thing. And at that moment, I was like super, I was just like psyched it was my first photo shoot ever. And I'm glad that was before the times of the internet.
I mean, you were 17 years old. I mean, you just got in a hot tub with a bikini on, so not so bad, right?
Not so bad.
But I do believe you were photographed in another bikini because at the Arash Masters one year, the K2 team was Hot Dog. And do you remember we had a 20-foot banner of you in a bikini posing for a Hot Dog? Do you remember that?
Oh, I did do a photo shoot with Shane McConkey with K2, which was hilarious, in my bikini eating donuts.
And that was used on the Arash Masters, but it was like a 20-foot tall banner of you in a bikini. I'm surprised you forgot about that one. But that was just playing into the Hot Dog, the movie spoof. So it wasn't like we were trying to do anything terrible. But when you say you're only photographed once in a bikini, there was another one and it was a lot bigger.
Thanks for that correction. Yeah.
No problem. Just wanted to let you know. So in your contest days, did you get really stressed before you dropped in a run or did you not even care?
No, I would just like breathe and visualize and chill out. And also I thought it was hilarious watching the other girls and what they were doing at that moment. Cause some people were like chain smoking cigarettes and rapping. Other people were like totally in the zone, super serious, not talking to anyone. And I felt like at the time I was kind of just loose and like whatever happens, happens.
Well, that's the right attitude to go into those contests. I think there's nothing worse than it's not a car race or anything like that. And you know, the money's not super ridiculous. Everybody should go into it having a good time and appreciate the best run, and that's what wins. But there are some people that are in it to win it and are pissed off if they don't get that top spot on the podium, and I'm glad that wasn't you.
Yeah, heck no. My dad was a professional tennis player, and he always taught me sportsmanship for sure from day one, so I'm glad I had that.
Nice. I did not know he was a professional tennis player. Was he any good?
Yeah, he was super good. He traveled the world as a professional tennis player, all over the world to different countries and internationally. And then he taught, Virginia Wade, took her from like number 37 to number one in her heyday. And then he operated like, I don't know, hundreds of tennis courts in this tennis operation in Florida before he moved to Tahoe. So things would have been a lot different if I was born in Florida.
So Virginia Wade, was that Roe versus Wade?
I don't know, man. I don't know my tennis history. I should.
Don't even worry about that one. So did your dad get rich playing tennis?
No, they traveled around in a VW van, my mom and him, and he strung rackets to help like pay for his competitions. And yeah, so that was his thing.
All right. So wanted to find a little bit out about that. But I think when we talk contests, there is one contest that means more, I think, to everyone in skiing than X Games, the Olympics. There's a whole lot of contests out there, but there's one called the Payne McSlonkey, and I think you were able to get second once. And what does that contest mean to you? And just tell me about some experiences growing up with Shane McConkey as your neighbor.
Man, that competition is like the most fun competition of the year for sure. And to me, it does hold like a much higher standard than the X Games and US Open. And you can't just walk into that contest blind and win it. I think it takes some preparation. And, you know, one thing that I did not do that year was prepare. I didn't go out before the contest and take runs on my snowblades. And one year I even forgot the snowblades and had to get carried down by Darren Rolfe and JT Holmes. So that contest is like, it's ridiculous. It's so much fun. And it's truly in memory of Shane, and it was his vision. And it's just really fun to compete in. And growing up with Shane, I met him actually for my first time. Like, he was one of the first people who I was nervous to meet. And it was because I looked up to him so much. And I just thought he was this amazing person. But then it was like, he was the guy that you hoped and you kept your fingers crossed that he was on the trip that you were going to go on. And if he was, you knew it was going to be just the most fun time ever, just because he had that energy and he shared it with everyone. And it was such a pleasure to get to know him while he was around, for sure.
And Shane's no longer with us, and you live in a community where, you know, there's some high-risk athletes all over the place, everywhere you look. I mean, people are taking risks, and there's been a lot of death in Squaw Valley over the past 8, 10 years now. How is that coping with the deaths? Because it seems like it's been every 3 years, every 2 years, something terrible has happened, and it's really hit that community, and it seems like you get hit by it over and over. How does the community stay together and move forward?
Man, it's crazy. I don't think it's normal for someone of my age to have lost more people than I can count on both hands that I consider to be close to me. And it's interesting, every death, I feel like I personally deal with it much differently. And the most recent one that affected me super deeply was Timmy Dutton. And he mm-hmm. was my best friend since day one. And we were like babies together and our moms were super close. And that one was like crazy for me to experience. But also being so close to Timmy and his outlook on life being so positive, I kind of have always carried with me on that one just to like be stoked, because I know for sure that Timmy would not want me to be bummed. And even though he's like still with me heavily, and I like think about him every single day, and I haven't had the nerve to delete his name out of my phone or anything like right. that. Yeah, I just like, I try to, when I think about him, I kind of have to laugh because he made me laugh so much on a daily basis. And I think our community as a whole has just like been through this together so many times that we know what kind of support each other needs. And I feel that so heavily here. It's really incredible. And I feel like my community here, I'm just like so lucky to have these people surrounding me and ultimately teaching me. And you know, like Sherry is like a perfect example of someone who is a guiding light in my life, and she's just so amazing. We call it it's not therapy, it's Sherapy. What is it? Yeah, something like that. Just go to her, and like, I don't know, our community's strong, and it's really a special place to live.
Yeah, it's amazing. Every time I go to Squaw Valley, I'm blown away with how tight the community is there. And just everyone seems to be best friends. And it's like, if you haven't seen someone from that community in a year and you see them, it's they're pulling you right back in to introduce you to everybody there that you don't might not have met. And it's just a great place. And the mountain itself is just phenomenal.
Yeah. And I felt that like crazy after this injury. Like every injury I've had, I've learned stuff from. The first one was how to take care of my body. The second one was much more like a headspace, like a more spiritual experience. And this one was just straight up gratitude for the people in my community, the people who supported me through this past injury. It was like absolutely incredibly mind blowing. Like I would open up packages and just start crying. People would stop by all the time just to hang out. And it was just a really special moment for me to have like a ton of gratitude for the people that I surround myself with in this community. Yeah.
So what do you mean you opened up packages and started crying? I mean, I got something from Amazon Prime this morning. I didn't cry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like random people would send me stuff. Like for example, my friend Ben Girardi, an incredible photographer out of Utah, he had this board that the graphic was this Black Panther, and he cut the board in half and made like this Black Panther snowboard thing and sent it to me in the mail. And I remember just opening it up and being like, how do these people like think of me and they're so kind and send these incredible gifts or say these thoughtful things? And it was just like I was overwhelmed with ultimately happiness.
Black Panther. So how long have you been part of the Black Panther movement? It is really relevant right now in the world.
Well, that call name. So we have like radio call names here in Tahoe.
Okay.
Yeah. And like Red Squirrel is JT Holmes. Rubber Ducky was Timmy Dutton. We've got the Teal Hippo, Brown Beaver, all these different call names. Mine's Black Panther. Actually came about on a trip with Crispin Chetler and Eric Pollard when we decided our radio call name was the color of your truck and your favorite animal. So mine was Black Truck and my favorite animal was a panther. And that's how that happened.
Okay. Yeah. And you hear it all the time. I think JT just kind of refers to you as Black Panther whenever I talk to him.
Yeah. Or BP. I call him Red. He calls me Black.
Okay. So you've won the 2013 Best Female Performance at the Powder Awards. What does winning an award feel like, or does it mean much to you, or is it just cool experience?
That was in 2013, huh? It's 2016 now. I need to step my game up.
You do.
It was super cool. That was the year after my major injury, which was two different surgeries, ACL meniscus, medial patellofemoral microfracture. I had a bunch of cartilage damage. So yeah, that was the year after that when I came back. And I believe you had given me a phone call, Mike Powell.
Yeah, I did.
And said, oh, we're focusing on Olympics, so we're going to drop you. And
yeah, no, we had that call.
Quiz, yeah.
Those calls aren't easy. And I remember yours actually very clear as day, because it was like we had a directive and there wasn't like a wiggle room, and super uncomfortable because we're friends, but then there's this business aspect as well. And it's obviously not cool to deal with the business aspect, but you have to get it done. You know, on a call like that, what's going through your head and what are you thinking?
I had literally just found out that I was going to be filming with Matchstick Productions, like full on for the next 3 years, like right before you called me. And I just felt like there wasn't any wiggle room, and the Olympics happened. And so like money was going towards that, and I would never hold it against you. Like I understand that business side of things, but I remember not like telling you that I was like, going to film with Matchstick for 3 years. And then that year, I filmed with Matchstick. My segment came out better than I could have imagined. I was just coming back on my feet. And the world premiere was in Seattle. So I remember like calling all the K2 guys being like, hey, you should come to the world premiere. It's in Seattle. And then I landed on a plane and Steve Reska picked me up from the plane, my now team manager for Red Bull, and handed me a hat and was like, welcome to the team. You're on the Red Bull team. So then I was like there in Seattle, world premiere, just won. I have three best female performance, just got the powder award or whatever, and had Red Bull sponsorship. And I literally lost all my sponsors. You weren't the only one, but I lost all my sponsors after that injury and was like, holy crap, I just bought a house. Like, what am I going to do? So I went from nothing to like, boom, it just happened again. And it was like this really cool experience to like go from nothing, but still maintain that positive outlook and just like be all of a sudden, you know, your dreams just coming true. It was surreal. So never hold that against you. You're always my bud.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, I think about it every once in a while, especially when I see it's like the first time it's like, wow, she has to hate me. But yeah, but I understand that there's a business relationship. And then looking at it now, that was probably one of the best things that happened to your career. If you look at your career from then on, your career's only gone up. And you probably had 6 to 8 months where you might have been questioning things, but you maintained a positive outlook. But I mean, look where you are today. I mean, you had a great run with Atomic. You're with Black Crowes now. I mean, you've had so many great sponsors. And then being with Red Bull, I look at that company as a company that really changes the lives of the athletes that are on their program. You can be sponsored by Atomic, Black Crowes, K2. It doesn't matter what brand. And there's certain things that you're going to do with those brands. You're going to go do a couple photo shoots. You're going to meet a couple dealers, and that's going to be your job, maybe help with some input on ski design. But with Red Bull, they're taking you to different events. They're giving you media training. They're taking you to make your body better. They're just teaching you how your body works. And can you elaborate on some of the things that Red Bull has done to make you a better athlete?
Oh, man. I think just for the sports community in general, they've done a ton of things. They've supported so many events. They have, you know, supported friends of Red Bull. They have, in my personal experience, really helped me come back from this injury. They've focused on my mental game as well as my physical game. They provide this amazing training facility down in LA. And so they're just this sponsor that, like, I feel like they get it. They understand that they aren't going to drop you when you get injured. They're going to like help you come back and get on top again. And they believe in you, and it's a long-term relationship. And I'm just like so grateful to be a part of that company. It's absolutely incredible. And everything they've done has just been mind-blowing. And then they like, sometimes I feel like a bit of a lab rat. Like, they study my blood, you know, look at my mind. They get me CAT scans before and after said trips where they're like putting me under pressure. And then they share that information with the like science community. And that's like a beautiful thing as well. Like, there's so many layers to Red Bull that I don't think a lot of people get to see, but to experience it and be a part of it is like mind blowing. It's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of seen it from the sidelines, and really, it's a totally different experience than any other sponsor-athlete relationship I've ever seen, and it's really a tribute to just what they want to do for the athletes. I did hear about a survival test in the outback in Australia. I don't know if you're able to talk about that, but I heard you had a great story to share.
Oh, man, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that. That was like this crazy undercover trip that I went on that I wasn't allowed to talk about it at the time, especially like Ingrid was getting married and James Heimer getting married, two of my closest friends. And I got this phone call from Red Bull that was like, hey, we've got this trip. It's 3 weeks from these dates. Can you make it? And basically they were like, you really don't want to say no to this. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I had to miss both those weddings to go on the trip, and they couldn't tell me anything. And so I did it. And I remember my team manager made it to those weddings, and they were just like, what the heck, man? Why did you make Michelle go on this trip? And they didn't make me, of course, but it was like a mind-blowing trip. It's soon to be publicized for sure, but that was a couple of years ago.
Okay. Well, and speaking of mind-blowing as well, talk to me about Burning Man. I saw some photos on your Instagram. Was this year the first year you went?
Yeah, this was the first year I went. I've always wanted to go and experience it, especially since it's so close to home. And I basically, like, when I was injured, I kind of got really close with Angel Collins, and she came to Tahoe and she was skiing here, and I didn't really know her that well, but I always knew that I'd really love her. And she visited me one day, and we just like did art all day and hung out. And then she got hurt after that, and I was like thinking of fun things we could do together. And I found this retreat, which was a singing retreat. in Oregon at this place called Brighton Bush. So we signed up for it. We both love to sing. And we went up to this hot springs singing retreat and hung out for 4 days and ultimately became like super, super close on that trip. And then she like moved to Tahoe and based out of Tahoe for the summer. So we did what we called Nehab together. We went to PT together. We just like, it was kind of, you know, building inspiration off each other. And then she has a great Burning Man community, which she goes with every year. And she had an extra ticket and was like, I've got an extra ticket. And I was like, oh man, I would love to go. So I got to go with her and I went with for 4 days and three nights, which was plenty of time for me to experience that. And it was totally insane. It was amazing.
Well, I wish I could have paid attention to your Burning Man part, but what stuck in my head was that you guys went and sung a whole bunch. And I was wondering if you could sing us a song, please.
Do you want me to play you one of my ukulele?
I would like you to play us a song on your ukulele, and I would like you to sing along with it as well, please.
Oh my God. Okay. I actually have an original song.
Okay, we want to hear it. It's a Michelle Parker original. She's been working on this one for years. You know, it's just something that came from her heart that she wanted to bring out and share with you.
I'm going to have to, like, tune this up.
Heard you're into the ukulele, and is that something that you picked up in Rehabville?
Yeah, it is actually something I picked up on rehab. When I got hurt in January, I was like, I need something to occupy my time, and I had this ukulele that was, like, this piece of plywood from, where did I have it from? I don't know. I bought it in Hawaii, like, years ago, and finally I was like, I really need to learn this instrument, and so I started learning while I was horizontal in the bed, and it's become such a healing instrument for me. It's been really incredible.
All right, well, I want to hear something. Oh, you're tuning, though. You're tuning.
No, I think it's tuned up good enough anyways.
Okay.
This is an original. Oh, man, am I going to sing you my original?
Yeah, I want to hear the original. It's the world premiere right here. Ladies and gentlemen, sit back. We've got Michelle Parker on the ukulele.
Okay, so don't judge me if I mess up at all. Normally, I like to like warm up a little bit, but here we go. I haven't named the song yet. Townsend, aka Haystack, calling.
Oh, he's like all gluten-free these days, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like celiac.
Yeah.
I'm gonna keep going.
Okay.
Only to find a peace of mind.
really matter where we end up.
That was awesome. I was expecting something that would really suck, but I was pleasantly surprised right there. And I didn't really think it was going to suck, but I didn't know it was going to be as good as it was. So that was Michelle Parker. The name of the song, it doesn't have one. So we will say it is When People Turn Into Animals. That was in the beginning of the song. I think she wrote the lyrics when she was at Burning Man, and that's why there's some of those abstract thoughts there.
Oh, man, that was fun.
That was your first live performance recorded on the internet. And ladies and gentlemen, you can download that at thepowlmovement.com. We'll have an exclusive cut of the song with no name.
I wish Cody didn't call in the middle. I wonder what he wants.
He probably wants nothing important.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Summer. At this point, we've kind of gotten through a lot of your career. I mean, we really didn't talk about details as to the fun of Michelle Parker's life. And I think that's really what this is all about. It's more getting to know you, Michelle. I know a big thing that you've been working on, and I think we should talk about, is Safe As. And can you tell us what that's all about and what we're going to see from Michelle Parker this winter?
Yeah. Oh, man. So Safe As is something that I've been working on with Jackie Peso, Ingrid Backstrom, Elise Sogsted, myself, and Lel Tone, Sherry McConkie. We've been doing it, I believe this is our fourth year now or fifth year. I should totally know that stat. But anyways, it was something that we created a while ago over coffee when we were after doing yoga. And we were just like, man, we need to give something back to our community that's given us so much. And we felt like it was a perfect platform for us to kind of start spreading some avalanche awareness and, you know, hopefully motivate some ladies to take their level one. And we've all been in different situations in the mountains where we felt like maybe being female has affected, the decision making in the group or whatever it may be. We just wanted to empower these girls to feel like they were, you know, strong mountain women. And so it's been this really fun event we've done over the course of years in Washington, Colorado, Utah, and California. We do a one-day clinic, starts with yoga, then goes into some classroom time. We each teach a portion of the class, and Lel Tone is our lead instructor. She's certified to teach level one and potentially level two, I think, maybe. Regardless, then we go on the hill and we hammer out some beacon drills, some group rescue, and then we end with like the world's best raffle ever because all our sponsors throw down. And we donate a partial proceeds to different nonprofits that are, you know, close to home, as well as our full proceeds from the raffle to different nonprofits like High Fives Foundation, Northwest Avalanche Center, Sierra Avalanche Center, all these different nonprofits that have helped us or helped our friends and ultimately help us keep us safe in the mountains.
That is awesome, and that's very important information to get. And Michelle, I want to hear where we're going to see you this season. I know you're going to be recovered from your injury. When do you think you'll be back on the snow?
Yeah, I'm actually maybe going skiing over in Europe pretty soon here. I'm feeling really good, feeling really strong. I'll be back. I think I'm going to really wait to start skiing hard until January, but probably get my feet on the snow in December. With the exception of this upcoming trip. And I'm just fired up to be back out there in the place that I love, in the mountains. The mountains like re-energize me like crazy. It's an addiction that I have. I realize being outside is super important. It helps me feel balanced. And I think that like being close to nature, you can really gain so many benefits. And that's one reason why I just straight up, I don't think I could live in the city. But anyways, yeah, I'm psyched to get back out with Matchstick Productions, and then we've got some stuff brewing, which is top secret information. You guys will just have to wait to see it.
All right, so top secret information from Michelle Parker. She's going to be back on snow this year. We're excited to see that. She only got to get in one story about me, which is great. And I want to thank Michelle for coming on the program. It's always amazing to talk to her, and we will have her on again in the future. Michelle, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
And you have an amazing season. We'll talk soon.
Yep.
So I'm an idiot. I shouldn't have cut Michelle Parker from the K2 program. Her career just skyrocketed once she left K2, and that's a tribute to Michelle's work ethic. She put in a lot of hard work to get through those injuries. And if you want to hear some more Michelle Parker, we have her over on Inappropriate Questions. She'll be answering three questions from Chris Benchetler, and you can find that on thepowlmovement.com. Also, if you want to ask any questions for future guests or provide any show feedback, you can reach me at PowlMovement1 on Twitter or Mike@thepowlmovement.com. Thanks for checking out the sponsored podcast. Our guest next week is Kent Kreitler, and it should be interesting stories from Kent, as he's one of the old school. He's one of the pioneers of free skiing, and we'll see what Kent has to say about the state of the industry and what's going on in his life. Thanks for listening to Sponsored. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and we'll talk to you next week.